Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I'm an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com. and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie, and I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oil sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Gale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot, with a tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. And here it is again. It is Monday, August the 3rd, 2020. And this is the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 57. And my name is Clyde J. Kale, and I am here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. And hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Constance.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
Welcome. You two, I tell you what, it's so nice that you keep me company here so I don't have such a lonely life. But I look forward to these our weekly meetings here so we can discuss art and exchange stories and talk about our gardens. And, of course, I don't have a garden, but Constance does, and I guess it's going crazy. We don't record our entire meeting, but let me tell you, some of our off-mic conversations are really hilarious. And, we would probably bore everybody else, so more likely. All right, the theme for this week, for our listeners, if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, that's talkartpodcast.com, to see the recommended videos. And I'm not even going to try to say that word because I'll mess it up. But I recommended two videos that give opposite opinions, contrary opinions about artists and about the art world and artists' careers, which was motivational for our discussion. And my rationale for selecting these, or my motivation for selecting these two videos, one video was a web interview that Paul Klein held with Foster Gostrom, who is a art collector, and he had known him for 40-some years, I guess. This was recorded about 2014. I think that was the date. And the other video was a documentary about the life of Norman Rockwell. And in the art world, these two people have completely different opinions. And I thought it would be interesting to kind of discuss maybe why and a little bit about their opinions. What motivated me to select that was this week with my own works of art. I've achieved another, or crossed another threshold, as I call it. I would say within the past couple of years or so, as I've been pursuing this art journey, the production of my art or the quality of it has been about 80% of it has probably been, you would call it decorative, you know, decorative art, you know, pretty flowers and things that you want to put on apparel and maybe put on your wall, but not any, I guess, significant. I mean, it's important, but not really significant to where it evokes a serious emotion. And I've created some pieces in the past when I thought about it, but like that, but they were happy accidents, which is what I called them. The more I thought about them, like when I did my Doubting Thomas, that was more of a tribute to Caravaggio. And the first time I posted it on social media, immediately the comments were, that's like a Caravaggio. The technique wasn't Caravaggio, but the emotion or the invocation people picked up, and that excited me. It wasn't my real intention, but at the time I had Caravaggio in my mind, I guess, when I was creating it. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then I've done a couple pieces that were, I folks have said were Van Gogh, because I really like Van Gogh's work. They were, you know, not necessarily Van Gogh like, because I don't attempt to paint like these artists, but what I strive for is to represent them or represent the emotion that their art generates. And so those are in the past, those were not all intentional. They were what I call happy accidents. This week, my three pieces of artwork were intentional. So that's how I come, I say I've crossed a new threshold. And how I know they were intentional, I knew in my mind what I was doing and what I was thinking of, but I didn't expect the response that I received. And the response was very positive, but each time I hit the target, bingo. I did for the first time, I did a nude. Basically, it's the backside of a woman in a form of a vase with flowers. And when I showed that to my oldest daughter, I always run all my art by my daughter. She's my main art critic. And she said, okay, so what? It's a naked lady's butt. She didn't catch what I was getting at. It's a very symbolic piece. And I call it a tribute to Persephone. That was a piece of artwork that Thomas Hart Benton created, you know, back in the 30s. But Anne Farley, who's you two know, her comment was, Clyde, this is a very emotional piece. That was it. She hit it. She hit exactly what I was going for. It's not just the naked vase. There's a lot of symbolism in that piece. So then that kind of inspired me. Okay, let's see what else I can do. Well, it's kind of fall, so I want to do some fall type images. So I started looking through a royalty-free website. I usually use pixabay.com for royalty-free images to find a nice, pretty fall image. I came across a reference picture, and I said, wow, that looks like a Thomas Kincaid. That really looks like a Thomas Kincaid image. And, of course, Thomas Kincaid, I like a lot of his art, as my daughters really love his artwork, and millions of people do. So I started to work on it, and when I got done, I reached a certain point. I was stood back, wow, that's Thomas Kincaid. It's not painted in his style, but it gives you that reminder. So I posted that on Facebook. Bingo. Comments like, it's magical. It's, one person said, Kincaidian, he made up a word, you know. Another person said, it's beautiful fantasy. Okay, I did it. Bingo. That's what I wanted to achieve. Now, the third piece, now, I haven't got that many comments from it, because the third piece was really kind of strange. I was kind of thinking about when I lived in Naples, Italy, and something that used to, I didn't go that often, but when I did go with my wife and mother-in-law to the fish markets, the fish market in Naples, Italy, you got to have a strong stomach because, first of all, the smell. Second of all, these markets have been in operation. They've been running these markets, open air markets, for hundreds of years. You pick out what you want, and then they butcher it and clean it right there for you. And you take it home in a plastic bag. But what always attracted me, what I enjoyed watching, in fact, I used to kind of stray away from them, was I liked the displays, because the Italians have this Italian fishermen, you know, especially in the large markets, they've got lots and lots of booths and set up. And how do you distinguish one guy from another, you know, unless you know them, get to know them, you know. They would have these wonderful displays of exotic, like the image I did of a, you know, a large fish with a smaller fish in the mouth hanging out. And it'd be all set up with fruits and vegetables and, you know, and then you pick out which fish you want. They'd have it in a, you know, in a bucket, you know, behind the counter or whatever. So, you know, I got to think, I started looking through reference photos. I wanted to do that. So I found a beautiful picture of the fish market of a display that reminded me of in Pasquale, you know, Italy, of during that time period. But then it recalled, when I was looking at it, it reminded me of the 17th century Dutch artist Jacob Gilliam. I'm probably mispronouncing his name. He was pretty much known for his painting of fish. Wasn't going to paint it like him, because this is pretty grisly. I mean, he has his fish, you know, the blood and the guts, and yeah. I didn't want to gross people out, but I wanted to, you know, paint a nice display with the chiaroscuro, you know, dark, and I achieved that because I got a couple comments. You know, I said, that reminds me of a 17th century painting. Okay, bingo, I did it. That's why I say I've crossed a threshold. With me and Constance, we've enrolled in a professional training course, and so I've been really working with oils quite a bit, and really working on improving my craft. And these paintings, I think, finally reflect that. So I've achieved a certain level there. My point of this was, whenever you take a course with a coach, or when you listen, like if you listen to Foster Gostrom's, you know, conversation, they talk about, you know, what is good art? What is quality art? Artists kind of scratch their head, like, you see a blurb on a canvas, says, what's so good about that? When you got this other guy who can paint a horse that just has such the loving eyes. It started me thinking about, you know, the what all artists try to achieve is to convey a connection. Like Diane, we've talked about this before, making a connection, you know, with the viewer. So that was my motivation, this long-winded talk, my motivation for selecting these two videos, everything. So Constance and Diane, you want to go first? First of all, you got a chance to watch the videos, right?
I saw the Foster Goldstrom one, and I some of the things he said I didn't particularly agree with, but I can see where he thinks that way from his viewpoint. I think he's more into modern art and abstract thinking and that kind of thing. So he's more into that kind of artwork. And he basically said that if the difference between fine art and illustration was that the fine art made you think more and have, you know, more ideas and stuff. But I don't think, the art that he likes was not, is not necessarily the only kind that does that.
Exactly.
That's in my opinion.
mine too.
When I listened to that, you know, and everything, that's what picked me up. Because as I was working on these works of art, also I had the conversations of Steve Houston. You know, we watched a video where he talks in the growing of an artist. And he was talking about you don't necessarily want to close the door. You know, you want to leave something in your artwork that causes people to think a little bit. But here's the thing, the difference. You can tell of Foster Goldstrom and his people, his generation and his society, his circle, you know, they are more into what happened in the 60s and in the 70s. The art schools, they taught artists, it's about me. It's about me expressing myself to the viewers, about me telling people how I feel about social consciousness and whatever. These three pieces that I worked on this week wasn't about me at all. It wasn't about me at all. It was about, I was trying to duplicate, I was trying to represent the emotion that these other artists generate with to people when they look, you know. And so when I took the me out of that equation, it worked. And I think that's what works with people on a different level. And that's what Norman Rockwell did. He took the me out. Yes, a lot of his work, because he worked as an illustrator, so he had a boss he had to please, you know, the editors of the Saturday Evening Post and the Boys Life and the other magazines, you know, that he submitted his artwork, you know, in the 20s and 30s and up to the 40s. But he still, when you really, really look at it, at his work and everything, he was presenting a narrative, but it was a narrative that most people identified with. It wasn't him. It wasn't the me. You know what I mean? So what do you two think about that? Am I right? Or am I just thinking too much?
When I was listening to that, I had a hard time listening to him because he seemed like a very cavalier, he had sort of a very cavalier attitude about how lucky he was getting into the art market and staying in the art market and making his money in the art market. I thought I would like to see Raffi and Klee listen to that whole program and get their opinion on it, because I thought to myself that he was really full of himself. And
yeah, there was a good bit of that.
And Klein was right in there with him on it being full of themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
There's a bit.
That's my opinion, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. Now, I got some good information from Klein through the program that he presented and we went through.
Yeah, because I'm stepping around it. I'm stepping around because there is quite a bit.
I'm not going to step around it. I'm going to step right in it. Okay, and I just did. Yeah. I think they're both kind of full of themselves because they went there. They were successful at being gallery owners, and they sounded kind of, you know, because they were so successful.
They had a bit of an elitist attitude. Or
they sounded a little snobby about the whole thing.
Exactly.
You know?
You know,
and there was a one particular Raffi and Klee episode that we listened to that pointed us to this one site where you could get a thing written about your painting if you could not figure out what to say about your painting. That
we're just not too impressed.
Maybe we could get them to say that about our paintings if we wanted to, you know. Okay, so I've gotten on my little soapbox, so I'll get off.
Okay, that's okay. That's what, because that, I was like, Diane didn't want to say it, but I knew she was headed in that direction. You know, when she said.
Sorry, yes, I just went there because I think it needed to be said.
Always leave it up to Constance to say how it is.
I'm a little more diplomatic.
Well, that's what this show is about, isn't it?
Yep. Then Norman Rockwell now is the opposite, okay, of what they're they're presenting the image and direction that they're, you know, talking about for a career to take. Norman Rockwell was completely different. You know, he went to
a lot of us really struggle through life trying to get there. His little thing about the stream or river or whatever going in front of him and him just picking out what he wants and making a success of it and throwing back what he doesn't want. I don't know. It just, his little metaphor didn't really set well with me. I mean, I'm sure that it worked well for him, but that little metaphor has not worked for me. You know, we as artists struggle every day. Every time we step up to the easel, we struggle. We struggle with just to pick up the paintbrush sometimes is a struggle. Just to sit in front of the easel and make yourself paint is a struggle, you know, because you think, well, is this going to turn out? Is it going to turn out? Does everybody think I'm crazy for even painting? You know, it's an everyday, every part of the process, a struggle.
Not every piece is a masterpiece, you know. I mean, I was happy.
It doesn't have to be a masterpiece, but, you know, it's still a struggle to paint because you have all these little voices in your head saying whatever they're saying that to make you stop working to begin with, you know, and it's a fight every day to work. You know, instead of just, hey, let's crawl up in the bed and watch television, the heck with the rest of it. Okay. Or, you know.
Okay, with that, let's take a break. And okay. We got an important message, and we will be right back.
Everyone needs to have a space that they feel relaxed and calm in. Hi, I'm artist Diane Hunt, and I create traditional, realistic oil paintings of nature. I'd love to help you bring the beauty of nature into your home or office. For podcast listeners, I am offering a $25 off coupon, good for the next 2 weeks. Go to www.dianehuntstudio.com. Use code PODCAST25. Let my paintings of nature help to renew your soul.
Welcome back to the podcast. You are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 57 for August the 3rd, 2020. And I am here with Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. And we're discussing the meaning of art and the meaning of life and the snobs and not so snobs and whatnot. Constance just got some things off her chest before we went on the break. So let's give Diane a chance to get some things off her chest.
Well, we were talking about Norman Rockwell too, and his whole outlook on his art was completely different from what Foster Goldstrom was talking about. He depicted how he felt life should be and his idealistic ideas of life in America, basically. And a lot of that stuff he totally made up based on, you know, how he had grown up and stuff. So it was interesting hearing about that. I didn't realize he had grown up in New York City. And he seemed like they were saying he must have grown out in the country or, you know, a small town somewhere from his artwork. But I thought that was interesting. Depictions were more realistic and idealistic. He wanted, you know, certain things to be a certain way. And it was kind of the perceived idea of what living in America was like at the time, I guess. You know, what everybody's ideal of American life was.
And he was criticized, you know, the hoity-toities in the artwork. You know, they didn't accept him. They finally, near the end of his career, he finally made some headway because he did, as the documentary states, near the end of his career, he was actually getting, one of our episodes, we talked about artists getting pigeonholed, you know, to doing one particular style or kind of art. He was getting pigeonholed and doing illustration. Plus, the market for illustrators, you know, had changed. There was television now and everything. And back when he started, that was how an artist made a living, an illustrator for the magazines, you know, and newspapers and whatnot.
Yeah, well, being an illustrator is a little bit different than being a fine artist, too. And he struggled with that, like wanting to do something besides the illustration type work. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I've been in that situation, too, where you're doing commercial type work and your soul's aching to do your own thing. And it's really, it does wear on you after a while.
I think that's when I talk about this week, I crossed the threshold. That's what I never studied as a commercial artist, but like I said, about 80% of my past art has been very decorative. I call it decorative art. You know, it's not particularly fine art, but I think I've now reached, or I'm on the right path now. It made me think of Norman Rockwell. It made me think of Thomas Kinkade. It made me think of that interview with Foster Gostrom and other interviews with other of the you know, art market movers and shakers. And there is a definite divide, Kinkade, because he not only did he acknowledge that divide, he actually encouraged that division. So a lot of his criticism he brought on himself intentionally. He picked the fight. It's interesting. I watched a documentary of Thomas Hart Benton, who is one of my favorite artists of the 30s. And reason why he was my favorite, because when I was in grade school, I went to the University of Indiana and I first saw his mural, and it was just fantastic. You know, I was just blown away, you know, how big it was and how detailed, you know, and I became a fan of you know, his work. And then after years later, when I saw his documentary, he did the same thing. He picked a fight.
I think any artist, in order to be able to grow and constantly improve yourself and stuff, you have to keep changing what you're doing and trying new things. And when you get pigeonholed into doing a certain style constantly over and over again, yeah, ad nauseum, it really kind of depletes that, you know, that growth. So
it has to be very frustrating to be pigeonholed.
Yeah.
The one thing, the characteristic of all these guys that I admire, the one important thing that which I myself personally want to achieve, aspect of art for everybody. Not art for just a select few, not art for just the museums, for just the galleries, but the art for everybody. The average person who wants to take the time to look at that art and receives an emotional impact from that art, that's what I'm out to do. And that's what they were out to do, you know? And so when we talked about their careers, you know, getting pigeonholed, whatever, yeah, I definitely don't want to get myself pigeonholed. Maybe that's why I'm bouncing back and forth in between different things. What about you, Diane? What's your opinion of that? Or,
well, I mean, I worked for a licensed artist for a while, and I basically had to paint in her style, and I worked in her studio. So a lot of the work I did had to emulate her style, and it became very difficult for me to switch back to myself when I was working on my own work. And that's one of the reasons I quit there, because it was just like, I could see it affecting my own work and I didn't want it to be doing that. So it was, I mean, it's like an illustrator, you're working for, you know, working at a deadline, and they tell you basically what they want. So you have to supply them with that instead of doing your own thing. And I can see, like with Norman Rockwell, how that probably was really after. I mean, he did that for so many years. Gosh, he did hundreds of paintings for, you know, the market and not necessarily for himself. So I can see where he was really struggling to let his own painter side come out.
You know, some people talk about the artist's voice, you know, it's that, and it's, but once again, it's not so much as the me, because if you notice, even his later work, you could identify what he was conveying, but it wasn't something from his soul. And until you look at enough of his family, one of those art historians in the documentary mentioned this, his work, actually, he was criticized that it wasn't fine art, but all of his, from the early days all the way through, is actually fine art when you really look at it with a art critic's, a clear art critic's mind. You know, his shading and his positioning and you know, you could trace it back to that he had studied, you know, like his favorite artist was Rembrandt. He studied Rembrandt and he wanted to paint like Rembrandt. But he did, he actually came across, his artwork comes across as powerful as Rembrandt, but it's not Rembrandt's style. Now, for me, that's remarkable. And that is what my own personal growth, that is what I am trying to achieve. And I hit that threshold this weekend, this last week. And going forward now, I know how to do that. You see, it's like once you achieve something, you don't forget it. You know how, you know, I know how to do it again. And it gives a deep personal satisfaction. But at the same time, when people look at the work, it's not, you know, well, Clyde's trying to say something. No, I'm not. Not really. I'm trying to inspire. I'm trying to do like what Diane says, connect your brush with nature. I still like that phrase. I'm going to steal that from you.
Can't have it.
No, that's hers. You got to make one up on your own.
Yeah.
Mine is I like for people to see what I'm thinking.
Now you see.
I mean, that's, I think that only an artist can, I guess writers can let you see what, not really see, but that you can read what they're thinking. But as an artist, I want you to see what I'm thinking. You know, that's how I let my thoughts come out, is through painting. The abstracts, I think you can see or even feel what I'm thinking. With abstracts, it's more you can feel what I'm thinking. If I'm feeling upset or I'm feeling happy, in an abstract, you can feel it more so. But in painting, I think you can see what I'm thinking more.
Right. This commentary that I'm offering is me. That's my goal. There's nothing wrong with you know, artists who you know, create a piece that is a social conscious presents a social conscious narrative, or expresses their opinion about something going on in the world. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. But Diane, you going to add something to that?
Well, I think everybody has their own thoughts on how they're expressing themselves with their art and what it means to them. So nothing's right or wrong. It's just, you know, however, what their voice is. I think I started painting and doing art when I was a kid because I couldn't voice how I was feeling or how I felt about things. And I think a lot of people do that, but that's not necessarily a right or wrong way of doing it.
Yeah.
In the case, you know, so
music, or because this is, you know, the word is the creativity or artistic expression, you know, that's what the historians and art educators, you know, would say that's what it's about. And this is advice for young artists. If you set out to, hey, I'm going to create art, get people to buy it. You can. There is art out there. There's a lot of that. There is a lot. Like I heard one art critic in when he was talking about, I think it was in a documentary of Thomas Hart Benton, said some of his artwork was just like pure kitsch. He said, you know, just because millions of people, you know, buy art doesn't necessarily mean it's good art. And when he said that, I said, what a snob. But then the more I got thinking about, okay, yeah, there are quite a few artists that, you know, hey, they sell. We see it all the time, you know. He's made the most money now. My mind just went blank. The modern artists, you two, help.
There's a few of them. Hirsch or
Damien Hirsch. The other guy.
Gogosian or Pollock or...
Alive or dead? Who are you talking about?
Like alive. He's still alive. And he's like worth so many millions of dollars, almost $1 billion, you know. He doesn't like giant bunny made out of metal and
okay. Coons.
Jeff.
Yes. You know.
Hey, that guy's laughing all the way to the bank. Dunk. Whatever it takes to get you there. Kudos. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Whatever works for you.
No, and that's not necessary. You know, I wish that that art critic, you know, I would love to hear his comments about Jeff Koons. You know, it falls into that line. I think of Jeff Koons when he said that, when he made that statement in a documentary, it reminded me, Jeff Koons popped into my head, you know, I said, yeah, that not necessarily, you know, necessarily good art, you know, because it's worth, you know, they was talking about art when him and Paul Klein were talking about Art Basel, you know, a little bit about that, you know. And
yeah, one artist was almost got sucked into paying for being into Art Basel.
Yeah,
you got to be careful and pay your dues to figure out whether somebody's taking you or not, you know.
Yes, that's how that led to that, you know, because they were talking about, there was a 60 Minutes program about Art Basel or something, and they were talking to, you know, some of the people who were spending $100,000 for a piece of artwork that, you know, the dealers there were saying, you know, I only deal with, 1% of the 1%, you know, so these people don't know anything about art, but they take all my recommendations. I was like, that's so full of crap. And it's true, it is, you know. And so the Jeff Koons and Damien Hirst and, you know, whatnot come to my mind when I
and he was saying that he was offended by that person who was saying that they only deal with the 1% of the 1%.
When he had
thought, and you're being a snob about what you're doing.
5 minutes earlier, he was it struck me. Yeah. You know, I don't want to jump on Foster, because I actually enjoyed during our course. He was one of his recommended videos. I enjoyed.
Well, it gives you insight to these gallerists, you know, and he did say that a lot of times when somebody walks into his place, he does take the time to look at their portfolio, which a lot of people don't, you know.
Well, gallery, like he no longer has, you know, has a gallery.
Right. But I mean, but when he did take the time to look at their portfolio, which a lot of galleries will not. They will make you have an appointment and then you have to send them samples of that when you're making the appointment, and then they may not accept your, you know, give you an appointment. So,
you know, so to
the gallery scene is really kind of rough.
Well,
and I really have not even tried to approach in a gallery, because, you know, you guys both know what my thing with the galleries are.
I did one time whenever right after I, you know, we finished the course, I went to I took what's called an art walk that they have here in Oklahoma City, you know, first Friday. And, God, if Oklahoma City people listen to this, they'll probably get upset. But I went to, like, I visited five or six, you know, different galleries and everything. The impression, they weren't rude to me. No, they were very polite and everything. But there was this, what's the word I want to use? There was like a fog in the air.
It's called getting blown off.
Yeah. And it was like because at first
they're polite about it, but it's still what you call getting blown off.
When they thought I was like a potential buyer, but when I happened to say I was an artist, it was like, okay. I mean, one lady literally turned her back on me. Whoa, okay.
Well, the thing about it is it's like you're a salesman, okay? It's consider yourself like being a vacuum cleaner salesperson. How many doors do you have to knock on before somebody will let you in and let you at least even demonstrate the vacuum cleaner, much less sell one?
Exactly. If you want to go to
So that's the whole deal. I mean, I sold Avon for years, and there's going to be at least 10 to 20 people who slam the door in your face and say, I don't use Avon. I'm going, you don't even wash your hair. But still, you know, that's the point. The odds are 10 to 15 galleries are going to slam the door in your face when you walk in.
Right.
That's just how it is. You know, and then.
Whenever I was motivated.
Once you get down that list of odds, finally somebody's going to say, oh, okay, let me look at your portfolio. You know, so that's how that. That's just how it goes.
To see what it was all about. And I didn't have any of my artwork, wasn't even about to show any of my, I was just the step of establishing a relationship, you know, whatever. That was the, the goal, or just to, just to see. And I really was turned off completely. I was just turned off. I did meet some good artists though, and I kept in contact with them. They're following me on Facebook and I follow them, you know. And
I think the mistake that you made was that you approached them during an event. When you're approaching galleries, you need to if you don't make an appointment, if you're just going into the gallery, you need to do it when they're not having an event, because they're there to find somebody to buy the paintings that they have displayed, and that's their job at that time. So it's like you're kind of interrupting that. If you're an artist and you go into it.
So, and they're exhausted from getting set up for that event.
Yeah.
And
so you're better off going in between events or at a time than that they're not doing that.
They're both slapping me now. They're both jabbing.
And if you didn't learn anything else from Klein's artist works, that was one of the first things he told you. You go in for the dates he says, don't approach them for anything except for to say, hi, my name is so-and-so. What a wonderful show. Thank you. Great. And walk out. Don't hand them a business card during the show. Nothing. Just say, great show. Loved it. Boom, walk out. Yep. My name is such and such, and walk out.
Interesting. Now, since that time, like I said, that was a good almost 3 years ago. What is interesting is I have been able to accomplish that through the internet, through, and I've established relationships with galleries through the internet, and so this has which is my forte. That was my forte anyhow, and being behind this wall. Yeah. And now COVID-19 crisis has been going on. That's become the standard now. So I feel rather, rather good. Yeah. Okay. On that note, I'll wrap this long-winded episode up. We haven't bored any of our listeners and our non-artist listeners, and I got slapped by both Constance and Diane on this.
I think that's a common mistake, though, that a lot of artists do make, especially when they're starting out, that they approach the galleries at the wrong time and in the wrong way. And, then they get discouraged and give up. So I think, you have to think about it from their perspective and look at it from the other side. Like, if you were working, would you want somebody coming in and interrupting you? So it's something you need to learn as a new artist. Just the way it is.
Will has been with me several times. Generally, when we go to an art place like that, and if they're having a reception or a show or whatever, I have to be very careful with Will. He is the world's worst about talking about my art and me to anybody.
Constance, you know.
Then I have to almost kick him in the shins when he starts up, because I'm going, this is not the time or place to do this.
Am I going to have to?
We can come back later when they're not having a show, but don't start doing this right now, because this is rule number one, do not do. You just say, you go shake their hand, find the guys who's having the show, you shake their hand, you announce yourself and say, very good show, and then bow out and leave, you know. Don't tell them I'm an artist or anything else. Just say, hey, great show, loved it, and leave.
Hey, listeners, Constance forgot that this is we have an international audience there. So Will's going to be famous. Yeah, just say that. Okay, let's wrap this episode up. That's a good note to wrap it up on, okay? For our listeners, you have been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 57 for August the 3rd, 2020. And we've been chatting with Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. And I am going to say goodbye to Diane and Constance. Bye-bye, you two.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Constance. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks. And thank you so much for listening. Hey, give us a thumbs up or give us a star rating. However you hear this podcast, please, we appreciate that. Give us some love. Bye-bye.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.